Hey, besties.
Welcome to the BFF Bookcast.
We're your hosts, Teresa and Katie.
Before we jump in, we just want to remind everyone that what we discuss are our own thoughts and opinions. Just remember, we are here to have a good time.
And as always, please check trigger warnings before reading any books we will be discussing. And beware, we curse like the Bat Boys probably do during their annual snowball fight.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. So today, honestly, like, I'm just going to tell you, I've never really been nervous for an interview before, but I was, like, getting, like, heart palpitations a little bit. So we have Jennifer L. Armentrout here with us today, which is, like, I'm fangirling.
Yeah.
No heart palpitations.
I mean, obviously, like, so we're here to talk about A Fall of Ruin and Wrath, which I read it last year when it came out, and I just did the audiobook as, like, a refresher, and I think it's better the second time, honestly, because, like, there's so many things that I forgot or that I picked up on that I didn't pick up on. It's just, I mean, a 5 out of 5 star read for me.
Thank you.
I agree. It's one of those fantasy books where I feel like, I mean, I felt this way about the From Blood and Ash series as well, because I've done both on audio, but it's not, a lot of fantasy books, I feel like you have to, like, it's almost like a trek to the 20% mark. Like, Tina, you and I say this all the time. Like, fantasy books, sometimes you're, like, literally, like, mucking it to try to get to a spot where you're like, okay, now I'm enjoying myself. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that. You write it where, I don't know, like, I don't feel like a ton, like, we're world building, but I don't feel it. Like, I'm not, it's not, I don't feel mucky at any point. I feel like I just kind of was able to smooth sail. I loved this. This was so much. This is, like, the first fantasy book I picked up in, like, almost a year. And I'm like, this is great. Why did I walk away from this?
And let me tell you, like, and it is such a relief to hear that, because I feel like any author who writes fantasy, there's that mix of establishing the world while also not info dumping or confusing people. You know, I always think of when I'm writing fantasy, especially when it's a new world, I don't know why, but I always think of, like, certain episodes of Game of Thrones, where if you looked away, half your cast is dead, you're confused as all hell gets out. And, or, like, you know, you can't, you know, you just can't follow anything. And because you weren't really paying, and if that's on me, you weren't paying attention. And so that is something I always try to keep in mind, but that's a struggle. And I think that I spend my longest period writing of a book is the beginning, going back and rewriting, taking out and, you know, changing entire where the book starts and so like that until I'm confident. And sometimes that will take, you know, a couple weeks, and sometimes it's a couple months. Like, if it takes me 5 to 6 months to write it, 4 of those months is the first 12 chapters of me just continuously going back.
Yeah, as a reader, that I want to just say thank you for that, because, you know, not to, like, you know, beat a dead horse like Katie just said, but it really, your books are very, like, seamless. They're very easy to just jump into. The worlds are very easy to understand, but they are also very complex. So I think it's the way that you kind of weave it in. It's like we're learning with the character sometimes, but it doesn't feel info dumpy at all. And I really, like, loved how this, I'm very intrigued by this world. It's giving, yeah, I was going to say, Earth. When they, like, mentioned, yeah, like, the 7 continents,
yeah,
and, like, the vast bodies of water and these, like, flying, like, machines and stuff, I was like, is this Earth?
Yeah. Is this us?
Is that an airplane?
Are we dead?
You know, it's funny because, like, when you mentioned, too, about when you reread something a second time, you catch stuff and, you know, it's like, it's like you sprinkle in these little breadcrumbs that they're so small that obviously through the first read, you're probably going to miss some of them because it's so, you know, in passing. And also, by the way, I like your sweater. I just noticed when you look back.
I was going through all of my like 800 sweatshirts because we're now in sweatshirt weather. That's all I wear. Yeah. Oh, well, I must represent.
I was like, oh, wait a minute. But yeah, it's, you know, it's funny too, because like when I was kind of setting up certain things with that, I was like, am I making this too obvious? Like, you know, with what it is, what is this world or what was this world at one mm-hmm. time? And, you know, but I was like, I'm going to make it kind of obvious, maybe a little bit. But then what I think is obvious isn't always, it is almost never obvious.
You're saying obvious, and I'm like, I here I am missing something yet again. I don't know. Like, I picked up on the earth comment and the, like you said, the bodies of water, but.
Well, no, and I think it's because it's obvious to me because I wrote it. You know what I mean? And right, so it's, yeah. But like, you know, what I think is obvious, I quickly realize once a book comes out, like, oh, that wasn't obvious. it wasn't obvious to anybody else but me.
Yeah, we say this like all the time about Easter eggs. Katie like doesn't pick up on anything. And I think I'm picking up on something and it's never right. I'm always like way off base. But like this story in general, I mean, I wasn't prepared for like a new fantasy series from you, you know, kind of until the previous one was completed. So is this just like something that you had thought of and you're like, I have to get this out? Or had you been planning this kind of like this book for a while?
It was a mixture of both. So as I was working, I don't remember exactly which, if it was one of the Blood and Ash books or the Flesh and Fire books. But there was this idea that was kind of building in the back of my head of just like little bits of ideas that I knew wouldn't really make sense in the Blood and Ash world or extended world. And one thing I've always been fascinated with, I am a sucker for anything. This sounds really morbid. But anything doomsday related, like it's just, yeah. I don't know what it is. Like, I like to make myself panic even more than the real world does. But like, I always, and one thing about that, like apocalyptical type shows is like, I think of like The Walking Dead, where it's like, oh my God, can you, and I don't even know if they did in the new spinoffs, but can you just tell us what the hell happened? Like, you know, how did we get here? Now, something I've noticed with a lot of dystopian novels, for example, or even dystopian worlds, they really, like, you never find out, wait a minute, how did we get here? Like, what the hell happened that this is what we thought? And so this was an idea that was always building back in my head, because I, like, back when I first started writing, like, what we call fantasy now was often in a genre of dystopian, or it was a genre of paranormal, or it was a mixture of both. And so that is kind of like, they're all the same a little bit in my head. Now, of course, it's different when it's like a high fantasy versus something that's like a contemporary type paranormal. But it really kind of started building at that point. And I don't know how spoilery I should get with
a little bit.
I mean, it's not really a spoiler. It is if you have not read, like, the Flesh and Fire series, especially. Like, if you read the last two books in that series, when Sarah has the vision in stasis, it's like some of that stuff should start to be like, wait a minute. You know, especially when I'm, like, dropping the rune in wrath. They rise as the rune in wrath. And so I think it's like I'm you know, laying a little bit of that groundwork where you learn what happened in that world. And, you know, and at the same time, there's a part of me that is like, okay, I'm trying to look up a way, because even though it's fantasy, I'm like, okay, well, this has to be like believable somehow, like just a little bit believable. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my God, I hope people don't think I'm a flat earther, because like because the idea I came up with is very similar to what flat earth people think.
I just want to like clip this and be like, JLA, right? Flat earther.
Flat earther, right? I'm not a flat earther. I believe earth is round. But yeah, so, but it, it's, the idea started to build with that, and also with Calista Liss's character, because I've always been fascinated with intuition.
Yeah, no, we were chatting on the side about how much we love Liss's character.
Yes, you write some, not only female, like Tina, we're going to keep saying Tina, I said this, Tina, I say this, but like you write female main characters that are extremely strong-willed, even though they might not be in a position of strength, but like they're going to fight their ways to whatever they need to do. But they're also like, for being in a fantasy world, or like Poppy, kind of like being concealed, like they're almost relatable in senses also. Like you give them humanish like personas almost that like everyday girls can relate to, but then they're all just so very different in the same aspect. Like, I don't know how you do it, but like I love Liss. Like she is just so, I just want to like stick her in my pocket and be like, I just need you to come along for a ride with me to like remind me that like I could be a badass if I need to.
I think, you know, and again, this, I'll probably repeat this too. It's always a relief to hear stuff like that because, you know, I think, man, this probably would be even worse than 20% of the book being like, can we get to something happening, is your characters are unrelatable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that I think is even worse. But what makes the characters relatable, I do think sometimes it's the style of writing, because people always ask like, oh, what's your favorite like classic literature? And I always shock people because I'm like, I hate classic literature. Nope. And yeah. People always like, oh my God, you just lost your author, you know, card. How can you? And I'm like, I can't relate to it. It's the way it's written. It's not written in a way that we speak.
Right.
And, yeah, and while I don't like Ryu you read, like, especially Blood and Ash series, like, they do have a little bit more of a formal way of speaking, but not completely to where it's, you know, like, where you're just kind of, like, having to, like, slow down reading to really make sure you understand what's being said. And I think
With your books, too, and I feel like a lot of fantasy authors, there's also, it almost kind of, like, it again, maybe, kind of Game of Thrones-y, where like you see a scene, so you get a chapter, and then all of a sudden it cuts and goes to something completely different. So sometimes I feel like that can lose a good flow when you're reading something or when you're listening to the audio. But you're nothing that you do is in any of your series. Like nothing's choppy. Like it just kind of, which I also think helps strengthen the character itself and like really kind of like gets you into like an understanding who they are as people, because there's just like a continual flow. Like even if you're focusing on something else, I don't know how the hell you do it, because like you do it real well, but like there's just like a continuation where you don't feel like you're losing touch with somebody else that's maybe not present in that chapter, or at least like the center of attention in that chapter. And that's pretty cool, because then I feel like you kind of like carry them through without you through the whole series or the whole book.
You know, I don't know. It's not something I don't even know if that's something I think, you know, I think about. Well, yeah, I do when I'm writing. Mainly when I think about it, it's like, when you're an author, you're kind of coming at it from a different look without really realizing that's how it translates to the reader, that, you know, that it can cause like a weird flow issue or be very jarring in scene changes. Now, of course, when you're staying in one POV, it's easier that way.
Yeah.
When you were first saying that, I was kind of thinking, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I've ever written a book that has more than two POVs. And that would be a challenge, especially if they're in a different setting, different plot, because usually they all have their own little plot, but in the background, the overall reaching arc is taking place. But when you write in dual POV, you do have to find that perfect part in that scene to break, especially if the other POV is picking up immediately afterwards. Because, you know, sometimes it's like you do have to back it up a couple sentences so that, like, it makes sense, or to ground the reader back into a different POV. Those are the things I think that you, as an author, it's like, when you're kind of deconstructing deconstructing certain sentences, that's why we're doing it, and not realizing, you know, that is what it translates to the reader.
Right. So I have a question. Like, do you have, like, a document that kind of is a way to help you keep everything in order so you remember, like, things that happened in one book so you don't, like, say something in, like, a future book that maybe critiques it? How do you keep, because there's, it's so complex. How do you keep it all straight?
I can't remember shit, like, save my life. You know, and I, you know, and I, you know, I do have ADHD, and I, you know, when I was younger, memory really wasn't a symptom of it. But as I've gotten older, like, it is literally like, oh my God, I don't know how I, maybe I was like this in school, in high school, because it's like, it'll go in one ear and immediately out the next. And that even includes what I'm writing sometimes, where it's like, and it's so hard to recall, like books, like 60 books ago that I've written, or even sometimes the last book that I've written, especially when dealing with fantasy, because there's so much world building. And yeah, I'm not going to remember all of it. And so there is, on the Blood and Ash side of the worlds, there is a massive Bible, basically, that was rewritten into the compendium, you know, for readers, if, hey, you want to kind of get a refresher, like, you could, it's a more fun way, because what I use is just like bullets and just very cut and dry. And then on the Fall, Rune, and Wrath side, there is a much smaller one. Because there's only one book, or, you know, with that at this point. So, but yeah, there's a Bible, and that's usually created with the editor and the copy editor. And then there is another person that they hire that kind of comes in and also adds just kind of what they think, will become important that I will need to look. But, oh, it saves our ass. Every book, because because you, some, like, I'm not a huge plotter, so okay. I mean, I know how. Yeah, I know. I'm a mix. I know how it starts, roughly the middle, and how it would end. But the road to that can veer all the way off course, and sometimes I'll just write like one sentence that means absolutely nothing at that time that I write it. That becomes a massive plot issue two books down the road, where I have to either write my way out of that plot hole, or, and sometimes even change what I'm doing, because I've pretty much, you know, pushed myself into a corner with something.
That's gonna be so hard with series writing, and especially in fantasy worlds, because I feel like not that romance is kind of like, or, you know, just general romance is kind of, I feel like it's very, like, narrow, right? Like, you kind of have your small little town world, and that's really it, and that, you know, moving on. But, like, fantasy, I feel like it opens, like, these doors, like, all these different things you can do and how you can do things, whatever. But I can only imagine, like, by, like, book 2, 3 and on, that it's just, yeah, like, the fact that you have to probably, like, almost, I can imagine, too, because, like, if you're in it, right, like, you're writing something that's just flowing, like, to have to maybe potentially stop and be like, wait a minute. Like, let me back up.
Well, and so what I do, if I'm not sure about something, so in the Blood and Ash world, because I'm writing the primal book, and so if I'm not sure of something, and then I can't really quickly find the correct answer, because I don't also want to spend a lot of time researching it, because then you get out of the vibe of writing, and you're just like, ugh. So what I do is, in like my little Apple Notes file to the side, I write the chapter number down. So when I send it to the editor, I'm like, hey, this is what I said. I'm pretty sure I'm right, but just double check. And that just helps their process to be easier.
That's true, too.
Now, if it's something that is going to really affect the book, usually I know. Like, that's not something I'm forgetting. Or I then make myself stop and look it up, because, or like really try to find it. Because sometimes it's not even so much finding something, it can be understanding what the hell I said. Like, because after so much time, I'm like, what was I even trying to say here? Why didn't I write this down anywhere?
Yeah, and then I have to imagine too. So I mean, I know that we don't really know a lot about the Highborn and like what their powers are yet. At the end, we find out that Thorin is like a bunch of ravens, and then he, like, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. He can like burn people. You know what? I was gonna ask for some spoilers, but I'm not gonna do that to you. But I also can imagine you're writing and you're maybe like sometimes probably like, hey, wait, is that happening in Ruin and Wrath, or is that something that I wrote in like Blood and Ash? Like, I'm sure that the worlds can kind of blur at times.
Especially between Flesh and Fire and Blood and Ash, because there were two different timelines. So I was having to remember, like, okay, wait a minute, they wouldn't know this yet.
Right.
And also, keeping in mind that there was a period of time that is spoken about in Blood and Ash that you don't see in Flesh and Fire, you know, that, you know, happens between the end of Flesh and Fire and when the gods go to sleep. But then also because you're dealing with a mystery element, there's always the fact that what they believed wasn't true. Like there was more to it, or this is what was said, but this is what really happened. And that's when I hate myself. Like, that's when I'm like, why did I do this? But that was also one of the reasons why I was very adamant, and a huge thanks to Bramble/Tor for, honestly, all the readers for being patient for the sequel, because I knew that certain things were going to happen that were going to answer things in both series. And I was like, I have to finish this first, because I'm going to start crossing wires, you know what I mean, when I'm writing it, that I wanted to make sure that when readers read the primal book, you're going to see things, you're going to recognize certain people. And it'll help, I think, people to understand what happened in the Fall, Ruin, and Wrath world. But, like, where does it fall in? You also will understand the whole Raven thing.
Okay.
That you do see towards the end. And, you know, completely random. But the idea that I got from this, it's because, you know, when you do get ideas, you just get them from the most random places. And sometimes it could be something you saw in a movie ages ago. And I remember, I don't know if you guys saw the movie The Prophecy with Christopher Walken as, I think, the Archangel Gabriel or Michael. It was like from the 90s, maybe.
Okay.
There was a scene.
Yes, I have seen that, actually. Yes.
He was perched on a telephone pole. Mm-hmm. And he was wearing the black jacket. But I think when the people looked back, it was like a crow or a raven. And I don't know why that always stuck in my head. So it was like one of those things. So
crazy.
And I don't remember much else about that movie other than just Walken was insane in that movie. Like, he was having fun in that role. But it's that's something, though, you do end up understanding more so in the Primal book. You start to see certain things.
Okay, she's still there. Sorry. I'm like, my internet's a little weird right now, which happens all the time.
Where do you live at?
We're both in New Jersey.
Oh, so are you guys getting a lot of rain right now?
No.
Because I'm in West Virginia, and it's a hell of a downpour, so our internet starts to do
I keep getting alerts that are like, conserve your water. Like,
you guys are having rain.
I was like, we're in a really bad drought, and there's fires. I'm like, I feel like we're in California right now.
Right, we've been in one, too. And so we've had, even yesterday, the red flag warning, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, even though we're getting a lot of rain right now, it's so dry.
It's still dry.
It's just running off everywhere. But right now, we have Starlink, because we're in a rural area. And it's really great, but it's a satellite, so that's when you need a lot of rain. It's gonna try.
Are you like in West Virginia, or are you on like the eastern side of it?
Yeah, I'm on the side that doesn't claim the rest of West Virginia. That's what I say. I'm sure people here would disagree with me. I'm about 60 minutes from DC, so
okay,
we're part of the Eastern Panhandle, so we're smack dab in the between Maryland and Virginia, but I don't know if you know where Harper's Ferry is.
Or I was okay, so I was going to bring up Harper's Ferry because I ran a race there. Mm-hmm. It's a charming little town with a lot of hills. So.
Yes, yes.
But that's my only West Virginia experience.
Yeah, I feel like no matter what shape you're in, if you try to walk down to Lower Town, Harper's Ferry, you're even walking downhill. You're just gonna be like,
My mom was texting me, and she was like, "You normally would finish by now." Yeah. Like, no one's tried to find Katie Olini's mom, but like, are you okay? I'm like, there's just a lot of hills.
It's a lot, and there are steep hills. Like, it's
oh my god,
like a straight angle upward.
And it's Katie's just getting ready for any training montage you need for any book. She's like, I'm here, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Get ready.
Yeah.
Trekking up and down places.
So, like, not to compare, obviously, Poppy and Sarah to Callista, but I feel like Poppy and Sarah were more, like, physically strong. Like, you know, like, they were very, they were trained. And Callista, I feel like, was much more, she has this, like, very, like, empathetic, like, mental and emotional, like, toughness, which, like, I find, like, so relatable, like, her strength and her perseverance. Like, I love that about her. So, I guess, like, did you write her character so that readers could relate to her a little bit more? Because, I mean, we're not all out there with, like, swords and, like, learning how to use daggers.
Right? Like, and cool. Also, like,
yeah, no, it would be cool.
So, yeah, I did that with very purposeful, because while I love the badass chick, right, who can get out there, I grew up watching Buffy, like, you know, so I love that. But at the same time, I think that for example, one of the things that I always will get into a soapbox about, and this is where this comes in, is that the idea of girl power usually pisses me off, because they're almost always speaking on a physical level. And when you watch especially other things like fantasy, like TV shows, the women characters are so much more liked if they don't act like a woman.
Yeah.
Arya is the example of she is a little psycho out there killing everybody. But that's okay, because she's not your stereotypical female character, woman character, through and all that. But also on that same extent, that strength and power physical is your very last thing, right? Because if you get your ass knocked down, you won't get back up, no matter how strong you are physically, if you mentally can't make yourself get back up. And so it was important for me to write a fantasy with a character that didn't know how to fight, and has to rely on other ways to get themselves out of trouble or to survive. And whether that be like a heightened level of something or just what sometimes people have to do in the real world to survive.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, because again, I love the kick-ass girl out there, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, not, that's, I would be dead if that was.
I would just lay down and die. I'll just right be like, now.
I'm done. I never want a favor, and I'm just gonna see myself out.
Right.
And then, and like, there's something like so cool, and like again, like my little like feminist hat putting it on, but like this like woman's intuition. We always talk about it, like a woman's intuition, like, you know, whatever. And then Callista has this. I mean, it's not a woman's intuition. She actually has intuition.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, part of her power. But I love, like, kind of, we always say, what if a woman knows, like, we're worse than the FBI, or like, if you need something solved, call a woman,
right?
And you know, she has like that like heightened power, so I'm so excited to see like what that turns into, because I feel like we're just scratching the surface with her.
Yeah. And so, intuition is something that's always fascinated me. You know, before I started writing, like, to really write, I had went to school for psychology. I worked in the, you know, psychological field for a little bit of time. And even though intuition is not really something that is discussed in the sense that we think of intuition, right? But there is obviously something there instinctual that warns you. I feel like all of us at some point in our life have been in a situation, saw something, experienced something, where you have that gut check, right? Where out of nowhere, there's like, it's a voice, it's probably your own voice, or just this feeling, you need to get out of wherever you're at, or don't do this. And 9 times out of 10, we do not listen. We just keep doing it.
Almost like talking ourselves out of it. I mean, literally, when I was finishing the audiobook, I feel like the last 10%, like, you hear Liz say, like, something's not right. This isn't right. And, like, I feel like she's finally kind of leaning into, like, there's something screaming at me. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I do think she tends to lean a little bit more into that because she's – I feel like because after a while, like, if you can prove what you're hearing in your head – is real, like, then you start to kind of lean into it a little bit more. So, like, I'm really excited to see where she take, like, where I should say, where you take us with this. Like,
there's just so many,
I have so many questions.
With her ability and intuition, like she knows that she has that gift, right? But she also doesn't know when it is sometimes her intuition or when it's, you know, her imagination. Or her wants or her fears. And I think that's why we often don't listen to our intuition is because we, as you said, justify, excuse it away. Yeah. But it's another thing that always kind of made me think about it is like, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been somewhere and there's nothing wrong about the place that you're at, right? It doesn't look creepy, but you get a bad vibe, right?
Yes.
And you don't know why. You leave there thinking, oh, yeah, whole family was taken out in this place. There's, like, no way. But you have this ugh feeling.
Yeah.
And, again, that's instinct. And to me, intuition is that, like, primal warning system that we've had since evolution that probably has been ingrained in us since we could walk, that something in your body senses something around you. Because, I mean, I just think about there's just situations all the time where you just, like, the hair raises on the back of your neck, right? Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to explore with that, mainly because I just know myself, I'm guilty of it, is that we don't listen to it. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, but what if that is almost like a superpower where it really almost becomes a level of, clairvoyance?
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, like, it's telling too, because I feel like a lot of times, and again, not to play like the female card, but if you do have that feeling and you say something, sometimes people do put it down like that. You're just crazy. Like it's in your head. Like
it's in your head.
I mean, you're being emotional.
I can't tell you how many times like I've been in a situation where, I mean, especially when I was younger, I used to get out of work and go on these crazy long runs and be nighttime. And there's been times where I've actually like run back to like a main road and called like my dad and be like, you just need to come get me. Like, but like then people will be like, I mean, he won't laugh it off because he's a dad. But like there's some people out there that are like,
you're fine.
And see, I believe that there is probably some criminal part of you that was sensing something.
Exactly.
So and I it think could be just, that you actually... To. You know, and here's another thing too, like from a psychological perspective, from that, our brains are amazing at adapting for us and to also protecting us. So sometimes we will see in things that subconsciously we know we cannot handle that. Like we will make this worse. And it will allow you to kind of not acknowledge on a exterior type of level that you know this, like somebody was there, but on that subconscious level, your brain's warning you, like,
yeah,
you know, there's something there that, like, you know, and I feel like sometimes you can see that, like, when you think you see something out of the corner of your eye,
and then when you look,
you don't see them, but a couple minutes later, you're like, oh my God, someone was there, like, you know, it's that. And you really didn't look in that direction, but you knew somebody was there.
Yeah.
And it's something I wish that, I don't even know, like, but you do wish it's something that for young, especially young girls, like, listen to this voice.
Listen to
like,
it.
Don't let people tell you you're
and it's always better to, like, be dramatic and it end up being nothing.
And being, to it's better not to say be anything. Dramatic and be
it's always... Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, And I think that, yeah, it all that just was in my head when I was creating her gift. Because with that, like Claude, like, there had to be people who believed in it, like, knew that she wasn't, like, making things up. And, but it's, because, I looked at it from our world. Like, yeah, well, if she was in our world, she would just get ignored. People would be like, you're dramatic, stop.
Yeah. Or, like, I'd be like, this girl's crazy. Like, I go to New York City all the time. If somebody stopped me on the street and was like, if you walk 10 more feet, you're going to die, I'd be like, get away from me, crazy person.
Like, oh, right. Like,
just keep walking.
Yeah.
But I think you give her traits that speak to, like, like, something that we should all take away from her, right? Like, you don't need to be the strongest person in the batch physically, but, you know, don't beat yourself up mentally. Like, stand up for yourself. Like, keep trying, keep pushing through, keep going. And, yeah, like, lean into that. Like, if you feel something, either say something or get the heck out of Dodge. Like, it's something there for a reason. So,
yeah. I think it's kind of cool. It's, like, funny, too. So, like, the relationship between her and Thorne, I mean, towards the end, she's afraid of him. But the whole time, like, she just is, like, I mean, we obviously know that there's going to be a bond there and whatever. But from the beginning, she, like, doesn't know, like, why she's not, like, even he's, like, why are you not afraid of me? Like, you should be afraid. Why are you not afraid of me? Her intuition with him is she's, like, it's, like, no, it's okay. Like, you're fine. And, like, the difference between their characters is just so different. He's, like so, like, cold and, like, stoic and very, like, matter-of-fact. And I love, like, watching them together and how he's so, like, entertained by her. Like, I think that there's so many funny moments between them. And just, like, endearing moments, too. Like, the first time he blushes and he, like, she's like, are you blushing? And he's like, I don't know. Like, am I blushing?
Yeah, like, he had no idea. Well, you know, in one of the scenes I really liked, it was really funny because the editor was like, I don't know about this, Jennifer. And I was just like, I know having to explain consent normally would not be remotely funny. But in this situation, I was just approaching it like, could you imagine? Because I feel like we live in that world where you have to literally talk to someone like, never heard the concept of this before. But it was like kind of taking that and being like, but what if this person truly does not understand that because they're not mortal? They do not think like we do. They don't have emotions in the same way. But that also, with his character being like that, it is fun because it does allow there to be a lot of moments where it's like, something we would be so accustomed to that Thorne would be like, what is happening?
I also like how you explain it. I know it comes towards the end where he is telling Liz, like, it's like just waking up and like knowing everything, but you don't know what you know until you're in certain instances and then you start to understand what you know. And I think it's like a good comparison because sometimes it's really easy to like humanize and be like, why aren't you understanding these emotions? But to have it like, point blank told you, like, this is exactly what it is. I think kind of like you get to then be reminded, like, yeah, his emotions and her emotions and thoughts and feelings are gonna be vastly different and out of scale because he literally just like woke up, was like, here I am, and then this is all I come with it. Like, made that person.
And so, like, with people, like, you know, I know there's different schools of thought that whether or not we are born with emotion or do we learn them, people, you know, some people believe it's we learn them from watching others, but then there's examples of where kids were not really around examples of this and still developed it. But so with Liz, of course, like even though her life was very hard, like she was able to develop emotion like somebody would typically. But then introducing someone who like, and you know, basically a class of beings who just do not think like we do and do not feel like we do. And even if they start to develop like certain emotions, it's still going to be vastly different, not necessarily in a bad way, but like they would just feel it a different way. Because I think too, that's where when I think of other book series by other authors, is like when you get somebody like an anti-hero who maybe has a background like that. It's like where, or that trope of what, how they call it. Like where it's like you would kill everybody but the love interest type trope.
Yeah.
I think that's like kind of when that trope for me really makes sense. It's where I was, oh, well, this person really does not think like we do.
It's like funny you bringing up like the nature, like I was thinking like nature versus nurture, right? Like Liz is the way she is because of nurture, like how she was like kind of brought up. And like Thorne being nature, but he literally is like born of nature and he has like, so he's very like, it, I don't know. Sorry. When you were saying that, I was like, oh my God, they are nature and nurture. Like,
and, but you see that in the end, they both learn the same way. He learns through Liss, which is a form of nurture. So it's, you know, and that's just a little bit of me coming out from my years in psychology of being like, it doesn't matter if it's nature or nurture. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, that's because in the end, the result, it becomes almost of the chicken before the egg.
Speaking
of like psychology, I feel like I thought, and this could be just me just not picking up on shit. So do keep this in mind. But Claude, when we first met him,
I have such a soft spot for Claude.
Okay, give me a second. Okay. So when I first met him, I was like, oh, this little motherfucker is going to be like, yeah, like you can't be with anyone else, or like kind of like mind fuck with her, right? Like, yeah, no, I want you to go out and be happy, but like low key, I actually really just want you for myself. Like, I thought he was going to be that, and then he wasn't. And then like you find out he's got some debt issues. Preach.
But, he's got a lot of issues.
He's got a lot of issues. And then, like, he goes missing. Like, he cares about her. But, like, he knows some stuff and, like, is trying to share. But, like, he is one of those characters I was like, you were not what I was expecting. And I don't know what the fuck to expect from you. Like, I'm actually, like, really excited to see him, like, in future books. Like,
where was Claude?
Like, where is he right now? Like, he has a purpose. I know you have him having a purpose. I just don't know what it is yet.
Well, and the thing with Claude, like when I was developing his character, it was like, obviously it's like you have like the Heimel characters where it's like, okay, am I going to make this person just a complete jackass? And that's just who they are. You really don't need to know more about that. Like, you know, kind of thing. But then you do have the characters you flesh out. And when I first started, you know, developing him, I was kind of, okay, where am I going to go with him? But I was like, okay, I think it's going to be expected that he would be, you know, especially in such a world where it is very much so the haves and the have-nots. Like, there's, you know, there's no middle class, really. The working class are, like, it's not good, like, for them. And, you know, and so when I started developing his character, I was like, that's when I decided that I didn't want him to kind of follow what I felt would have been kind of like the more obvious route. But I will say, like his drinking and his partying and his spending, he does know some stuff. And I will say that he probably knows what's coming. And so he's you know, concerned about that, or not, maybe not even concerned, is he just knows.
He has knowledge.
That's why I think he's like so okay with like letting her go with Thorne too. Mm-hmm. Almost like
something.
I was gonna say, I am so intrigued by him as a character. I hope he like stays on like the good side of things and isn't like some sneaky like bad guy. I will be so upset because I've like put so much. I put like all my eggs in Claude's basket for some reason. I'm like, no, I trust Claude.
Well, once he started like up to this, I was like, okay, like. He seems to really be towing the line of good. I'm just hoping he.
Yeah, and I think when you get to the scene where they're sharing dinner with Thorne, is I feel like you start this. I feel like for me, that's when I hope the readers start to this. You know, would start to see that Claude. You know, he cares about Liz in the sense of, you know, wanting her to be safe, like wanting her to be protected in a way that he knows that she can't protect herself. Like, where, because again, it's like, I think, you know, going back to having, you know, characters that are kick ass, it's like, even if you can fight and even if you can shoot a bow and you can use a sword, you're always going to end up being in a situation where you're going to need help. You cannot fight this person. You're going to lose. And even more so if you're somebody who doesn't necessarily have that training. And he, you know, when you, with the second book, like, you do know of what, like, he knew, you know. Okay. And I do think that even probably with Primal, you will start to get some indications of what Claude could have known. And, you know, I know a lot of readers have speculated that Liss is somehow related to Syra and Poppy. And I'm always like, sometimes I'm like, where, like, even if the theories are on point, I'm like, I didn't even set the groundwork for that yet. or if the theories are nowhere near on point, it's just interesting to me, like, where we start connecting dots, you know, and whether or not there are dots I put there or dots that I was like, well, I was going to do that.
I was thinking that there was maybe a connection because I was like, in the beginning, or I don't know at what point during the book, I started being like, oh, is Calista, like, is she, like, reincarnated? Like, was his, like, of somebody else? And then, of course, like, I was, you know, reading, like, the other books. I'm like, oh, like, there is that reincarnation kind of, like, souls. So, I mean, you obviously you don't tell us anything, but you.
I will say she's not reincarnated. And no, I'm not playing the word game. With reincarnation in Reborn, which is what I've done to people in the past. But I mean, there are definitely similarities there. I mean, I think you see more so in Flesh and Fire. One of the things is the intuition. Yeah. And you see what that actually is in that other series. You know that is a very powerful thing that certain people had. And so you will start to see that building of, you know, that groundwork. And it's so hard for me not to talk about that stuff because of course I'm going to be excited once that book comes out and people are going to be like, oh, like now I see like how these two worlds are connected. And
yeah,
you know, and there's like, and then you end up really finding out whether or not you truly understand in Primal or in the Fall of Runeterra sequel, what they are, like, what were they? But I don't know, like, I think I've dropped pretty, what I think is big breadcrumbs, but probably isn't. If you really want to find out, look at the names. I always do what I call, and I don't mean this at all towards the readers, it is for myself. Yeah. I write fantasy for dummies, and I am the dummy. So
when I need to dumb it down some more for this one. For
sometimes I'm like, I need to dumb it down for my own ass. But when I create words, there are usually bastardizations of Latin or an actual world. A word that we know.
You know, so, I'm going to literally go back and open all your books and, like, go to the glossaries and be like,
I would say definitely fall, look at that, and then just maybe think, okay, this word is pronounced this way. And so I'm like, I was getting ready to say it, but I think it would be more obvious then. But think, okay, it's spelled this way. This is not how you spell it, but I pronounce it like this. What is this? And then type it in. I think you will start seeing certain things. And
I have homework.
It's perfect because we've read, like, to read, and then we've just listened, so we know the pronunciations now.
Right. Yeah.
Let's just hope they pronounced it the way.
Did a phenomenal job because, like, again with like fantasy, like it's hard to pay attention to fantasy books on audio. I feel like I have to either be like on a walk or a run, or I'm staring at a blank wall, and like. You don't get that with this book. Like you can like I would, like you're cleaning chores and you're like, oh shit. Like, okay. Right, like, you can, it's not like you have to be like, wait, if I, like you said before, like if I blink and turn around for 2 seconds, I've missed everything. It's not like, that. So it's very much appreciative because I love an audiobook.
Yeah.
she did a great job.
Yeah, no, she did. And the narrators for all your series, cause I've read and listened and my mom is part of, like, she logs into my Audible account, and she was, like, looking for books, and I was, like, just do From Blood and Ash. I was, like, just try it. She's obsessed.
So you read it first, and you told me that, like, I'm not kidding you. This, like, you know how moments stick, like that guy, the bird standing on the whatever for your book series? Like, I'm not kidding you. I'll never forget this day. It was September of, I don't even know how many years ago. It was definitely
2021.
And I was supposed to go on a 7-mile run. It was a Saturday. It was sunny. It was beautiful. I went for a 10-mile run because I couldn't stop listening to From Blood and Ash. The narrators were so good. Like, my husband's like, are you okay? I'm like, shh. Like, I'm good. I'm just going to keep going. I just need to run some more. I keep listening to this book.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I'm pretty sure, like, I always have all my characters hating to run. It's like, as you are running, like, that just makes me laugh. Because I always am like the character, like Sierra, like no matter how much she can do, she's always like,
she's running.
Always running.
Well, I'm running with her and then I'm missing all the breadcrumbs.
So, like, when we're reading a book, we're texting each other and we're like, oh my God, when you get to this part, like, oh my God, when you get to this part, what was your like favorite scene to write for this book? Hard to choose, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a couple of them. One of my favorite scenes was the opening, the prologue. And mainly it was just the setup of that, because for me felt that was kind of, because I felt like as a reader, you go into it, you know something, and I was trying to set that up to where it made you almost feel like intuition or instinct, where something is coming into this building that isn't human because of how you're starting to notice the lights going out, the temperature dropping, or the dogs in the town going silent. And so that setting that up was a lot of fun for me. Another scene would be, I always like these kind of weird reasons, but like when Thorne is regrowing his eyes back.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's gross, but at the same time, it makes me laugh. Because
yeah, that whole encounter in the blacksmith's house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that whole chapter, or, like, however many chapters, like, so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's a good,
everything about it is so good.
And I think the other one is the dinner scene. Just because, it was like, there was this awkwardness there, there's humor, it's sexy, it's got all these different things going on where I feel like you might be like Liz, where you're kind of like, oh my God, like what is happening, like kind of and so those scenes are always, but also when you see Thorne's people who came with Thorne, and you start seeing his personality coming out when he's in, like when they're arguing about how tall he is, and you know, purposely saying, you know, he's shorter than what he is. It's, you know, it's just, and I like those little moments are like throwaway lines, but I think they are the things that actually define a character.
Yeah.
Real to you.
Yeah. They humanize them and give them that like depth as a character. For sure. So we put up on our Instagram story yesterday, like, that we were going to be talking to you today. Did anybody have any questions?
People only had one question.
Literally the only question was, when is book two coming?
God damn it. Yeah, it's definitely going to be after Primal comes out.
Yeah, so yeah.
There is definitely going to be a bit more time, but there's, like I said, there's a rhyme to my reason with that, because I wanted the readers to, because I feel like most who have read Fall of Ringwrath read the other series, and so I kind of want them to kind of finish Primal. What I think would happen is, you finish Primal, you're going to go back and read, as my friends call it, Fora.
Yeah.
Fora. You'll go back and you'll read that, because now you have like a bit more of insight into some of these characters. But also, I would think, to me, because to me, you'd be like, okay, wait a minute. Like, are you now eventually going to see the crossover of some of that? And so there's a reason for it. And I wish that I was able to write some of the other books faster, because I didn't plan for there to be such a gap in between them. But I also didn't plan or like I didn't know, like when I got that many books into a fantasy, for example, that oh, the length of time it takes me to write a book now doubles because I'm having to go back and look at stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, it is, you know, a lot to kind of like wrap up.
Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna say, as a reader, I appreciate you taking like the time and the care to like do justice to these stories, because I would rather wait two years, 3 years, whatever it is, to get a great book than to like you feel the pressure to rush something out and then not do like the characters or the story justice because people are like demanding something. So take your time, but like don't take too much time.
Right. I'll take another year. I appreciate, and for the most part, everybody has been really patient. And I think it's because, I mean, I'm part of it, I did it to myself. Because like when we started originally releasing the Blood and Ash series, I was still in my era of like writing really fast. And so we were able to release those books like 6 months apart.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, like they came out, like from Blood and Ash, I came out in March, and then I think A Kingdom came out in like September, October, I think.
Okay.
And so, and I think The Crown came out the following spring. So it was like you kind of set expectations that it's always going to be like that. But like as I progressed further into the series, I was like, I cannot, like it's just, you know, I used to be able to write like several, I mean, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 words a day, and then I'm going down to like 1,300 words a day because it's so much stuff that I have to remember, like as yeah. I'm writing it.
Gosh, and yeah, you're yeah. doing all the research and like yeah. recon.
Oh,
and
goodness.
Then going back and forth between, you know, the main characters' heads that was writing it. And then so a lot would happen in that case. And it happened when I went from like, because I think I went from wrote that in, it was a while ago. I'm trying to think what book I wrote after that. It could have been A Soul. No, I don't think it was that. But it was hard, like, going from her POV then into a different character's POV
yeah.
and making sure that I'm in the right voice. And yeah, that sometimes, yeah, I will have to write quite a bit before I realize where I need to go
hold
back
on, yeah.
start tweaking things because I'm still writing a little bit in this other character's voice.
Well, no, we really appreciate, like, we love that. We love this book. We love your other series as well. Yeah. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, you're awesome. Thank you.
I know, like, this was so fun. This went so quickly. I was like, just like looked at the time.
I know,
and I was like,
the time, I was like, oh shit.
Like, don't want to, yeah. Like, I don't want to keep you too late. It is 9 p.m. on the East Coast right now.
Thank you for doing the 8 p.m. Yeah, it's not fun to be super
fine.
Late.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, I always feel like I'm the one who's always like, because I always ask for like 7 or 8 because then I always feel like that's, because I think I must be dealing with, I must be doing a lot of West Coast or, you know, because it's I always have to move it up. So it's always good to be like, okay, we're on the same time zone.
Yeah. But yeah, we really appreciate it. We like had such a blast talking to you. And we just like cannot wait for, I'm really excited for Primal and for basically anything else that you write. We will be reading.
I will tell you if you guys are like missing Thorn, especially if you are part of Jay Landers, it is my Facebook group where I share teasers in. And ooh. I think that if you're missing Thorn, you should go in there and look for Primal. It'll be P-O-B-A-B teasers. And I think you will, this really isn't that much of a spoiler because I've already dropped spoilers in that group, that there are going to be certain characters that you recognize that you're actually going to see. Now, of course, they're going to make you wonder at first, like, wait a minute. Always, like, I tell people when they're in their group, remember, these are out-of-context teasers.
Yes.
You will understand later.
Torture.
I'm literally, we're hanging up, I'm going right to Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Because yeah. I need more. Like, I thought that I was going to be satiated after the last Flesh and Fire, but I was like, okay, like, we got an ending, I'm going to feel good. No. I'm like, give me more now.
Well, I feel like with that end of the book too, it's like, yes, you have an ending, even though you know, like, obviously other things have happened.
Yeah.
But also, I think there's so much, like, you know now, like that build up to, oh, this is where this is heading.
Yeah. I do want to say just one more thing about how you developed the character of Colas, because, like, I hate him, but I, like,
did you feel like sorry him,
but I hate him.
Yeah.
But I love, we've said this before, we, like, love the well-fleshed out, like, villain.
Yeah.
That is, like, yeah. Not just, like, a one-note villain where I'm, like, there's, I kind of get him a little bit, but, like, fuck him.
And I think it's the same thing with Isbeth, right? Where, like, it's the idea of when does retribution become revenge? Like, you know what I mean? Like, when does your anger now overshadow what was done to you?
Yeah.
And again, a lot of it is, at least I keep telling myself, because that means I didn't waste like tens of thousands of dollars on college, that a lot of it is the psychology part of it is very few people are born bad. And when you say born bad, I don't even want to say sociopaths, because even some of them aren't necessarily bad as long as they're aware of their disorder, right? And they're, you know, actively not doing things. That would be bad. But, like, people don't, I feel like in the real world, someone does not turn out this way just because they're bad.
Yeah.
Things have happened. And I feel like, too, it's hard for us to understand that empathizing with a situation does not mean you are justifying it.
Right.
And I think that says something about human nature, right? That you know this person is terrible, but you also, like, damn, like, what if one of these things went a different way?
Yeah.
Where would you be? You know, kind of, again, it humanizes the villain.
It does. And I really love that.
I enjoy it, though. I like that depth. Well, thank you so much again for your time. This has been amazing.
Thank you guys so much.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to receive notifications anytime a new episode drops.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at thebff.bookclub. If you have any comments, questions, book recommendations, or books you want us to talk about in future episodes, please send us an email at thebff.bookclub1@gmail.com.
We appreciate your support.
See you, fuckers.